de lunes a jueves. You
the Safari Park. You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry!
Larry, get into bed now!
Come on, Larry! Larry!
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name buried in cheers and applause? Well, I think not. You know, we say truth lives here at the Take No Shit Dojo. And so part of our sworn duty is to call bullshit when we see it. And one thing that is often marinated in and then deep-fried in bullshit is the word respect. You really gotta watch yourself around that one. Many years ago, I got a terrific crash course in the many shades of the word respect from my old friend, Tony Spumante. And I'll be talking about that lesson a little later in the show. So last week, I see this post on social media from a guy I did a little business with years ago. And he's eulogizing a former business partner that had recently croaked. When these two guys split up their company, it was most definitely not amicable. And so the surviving partner writes this tortured, half-assed tribute in which he tries to say nice things about the dead guy. Why? Why do people feel compelled to say complimentary things about people they loathe once they're dead? If these two dudes were in the same zip code as each other, there would have been blood. They hated each other's guts. But to read obituaries about this dead business partner, you'd think some comedian Jesus had returned and just died again. How he was magnetic and magnanimous, and everybody gets this one, right? He could light up a room. And I'm thinking, who the fuck are they talking about? The guy I knew could clear a room. Just with his B.O. And if you got in range of his breath, you'd leap out a window. The guy I knew was just an avaricious, unpleasant slug. He chewed with his mouth open, could barely carry his end of a conversation, dressed in hamper chic, and had all the charm of a tumor. Maybe that was just when I met him. Maybe everyone else got to see him when he wore some special suit like Iron Man, his charm suit. And when he zipped into that, he was warm and charismatic and magnetic and lit up a room. Sure. Why do people do this? The old bromide says, do not speak ill of the dead. But why the hell not? Are they worried about haunting by the dead guy's ghost? Why must people put on their rose-colored glasses when looking at a recent stiff? And their pens and keyboards just spray compliments and accolades. We know it's all bullshit, yet they still do it. Okay, so if you don't want to say anything nasty, then how about just the facts? Hear ye, Joe Blow is dead. He was this old, the end. But people don't just bend the truth, they fabricate piles of lies about people when they die. My paternal grandmother was not well liked. At her wake, I sat opposite her coffin with a handful of attendees. I say attendees because mourners would have been dishonest and inaccurate. And my Uncle Bob, a man who's never uttered a word of bullshit in his entire life, turns to me and says, look at this, not a wet eye in the house. We all laughed, and then we left. But Uncle Bob was a diplomat compared to a woman in Texas where just a couple months ago, some folks in Galveston gave a long last and honest summation of the recently dead. Now dig this obituary. Leslie Ray Popeye Charping was born in Galveston in 1942 and passed away January 30, 2017, which was 29 years longer than expected and much more than he deserved. He leaves behind two relieved children, six grandchildren, and countless other victims, including an ex-wife, relatives, friends, neighbors, doctors, nurses, and random strangers. It continues. At a young age, Leslie became a model example of bad parenting, mental illness, and a complete commitment to drinking, drugs, womanizing, and being generally offensive. Now, hang on a minute. I'm starting to like this guy. It goes on. Leslie enlisted in the Navy as part of a plea deal to escape criminal charges. While in the service, he became the boxing champion and went on to embarrass his family and country by spending the remainder of his service in the Balboa Mental Hospital. Leslie was surprisingly intelligent. However, he lacked ambition and motivation to do anything more than squander the family savings and fantasize about get-rich-quick schemes. It continues, "With Leslie's passing, he will be missed only for what he never did, being a loving husband, father, and good friend. No service will be held, there will be no prayers for eternal peace, and no apologies to the family he tortured. Leslie's remains will be cremated and kept in the barn until Ray, the family donkey's wood shavings, run out." What does that mean? I guess wood shavings are like kitty litter for donkeys. So Leslie's ashes will be shat upon by a donkey. I gotta tell you, I think that's the greatest obituary ever written. But of course, some disagree. As one guy said, he said,
"Leslie may have deserved all this, but the person writing these bad things about a dead man is just as bad."
So there you have it, right? People would rather read a lie than the truth. Leslie's dead. But apparently, some guys think that dying transforms an asshole into a good guy. What is the logic behind this reverence for the dead? When I first read this obit, I thought it might be a gag or a hoax, but no, it's real. Someone tracked down the author, who happened to be his daughter, Sheila. She said that she was going to write something nice, but that would be lying, and that her father hated a liar and would appreciate the obituary she wrote. I tell you, I'm liking this Leslie guy more and more. Sounds like he was a no-bullshit dude. Sheila also said Leslie threatened many lives and had shot up various houses in his rages. Well, now I'm pissed I never got to hang out with Leslie. Death threats and enraged gunplay. There was a lot to like about this man. If only he could have guessed it on Dick Masterson's show, he'd have topped the rage board forever. Sheila goes on to say there was always a blow-up with employment. He'd get fired or get mad and quit. Quote, "One of Popeye's get-rich-quick schemes involved making figurines out of nuts and bolts. All the family had to show for it was buckets of unused supplies." I wonder if they were those classic naughty nuts and bolt figurines. You know, the ones usually with a male bolt chasing a female nut. And who wouldn't want one of those on the mantle, right between the Velvet Elvis and the Chia Pet? Can you miss someone you never met? I think I do. One of the most overused words today is respect. People seem to think everything and everyone deserves respect. Undeserving respect is often the underlying reason so many kids wind up emotionally crippled adults at the hands of clergymen that their parents respected. Oh, Father McGinnis is a man of the cloth. He could never do such an awful thing, could he? If angry fathers had squelched their respect and slit some of those bastards' throats and hung them out a window by their feet, that might have served as a mighty powerful deterrent, would it not? But back to paying respects. Even when people are sincere, they often go about it in such a cheesy way that they are in fact disrespectful, or at the very least, socially retarded. At an office I worked at, somebody croaked back at headquarters in New York. This person was known by all, and unlike Leslie Popeye Charper, he was generally well-liked. And so a couple of my coworkers came into my office, asking me to sign a group condolence card for the deceased wife and family. And when I refused, they were kind of pissed off. And one doll-eyed idiot took an attitude and said,
"What are you, too good to sign this?"
And I said, "Think about what you're doing, Bright Eyes."
"Dear widow of dead guy, sorry your husband's dead, but not so sorry that I'd take time to write my own condolence note. So I'll just scribble my name on this idiotic group card the way a goddamn 6-year-old would."
And now on social media, In place of the group condolence card is the sad emoji. Oh, your good friend is dead? Here's a sad emoji.
There now, all better.
And then everyone chimes in with their sad emojis. Why hasn't Zuckerberg figured out an emoji for a group hug? I predict that within 5 years, all human communication will be reduced to 3 basic emojis. Happy face, sad face, and mad face. That should cover everything, right? And some sick bastard will find a way to plant LEDs under the skin in our foreheads and wire it to our limbic system, so whatever we feel will flash the corresponding emoji to the world. Words are becoming superfluous, and nobody can spell them anyway. In 10 years, we'll just fucking squeak at each other like dolphins. There's so much falsehood and bullshit about respect, it took an adventure with Tony Spumante to snap it into clear focus for me. It was a beautiful autumn morning in New York when the doorbell rang, and when I opened the door, I was astonished. There stood Tony, decked out in a 3-piece suit with tie. His ruby-red Coupe de Ville was idling at the curb. Not only had Tony never been to my home, I'd never even given him my address, and I was unlisted in the phone book. "Morning, Slick," says Tony. Tony would sometimes call me Slick. I asked him to come on in and if he wanted some coffee. "Well, actually, we're here to ask a little favor." Oh, shit. Well, he's dressed too good to bury a body. What could this favor be? Tony eyed the next-door neighbor's house. As usual, the old bag was loitering near the door with her ears flapping. Tony had never, ever visited my home, and he did not look like my typical associates, and that car, well, she must have been so nosy her blue hair was about to combust. He nodded at her house and says, "Can we talk in a car?" So I get in the car and I'm really kind of nervous, because although Tony and I are friends, there's still this huge chasm between us, sort of a forbidden zone of silence about his family's business. Tony sparks a cool. "Can you help me out for a couple hours?" There's a loaded question. I wanted to answer very carefully. Tony had never involved me in the family business. In fact, he'd always assiduously avoided the topic. When he'd get close to it, he'd go, "That's all I'm going to say, Larry. I don't want you to ever have to lie in court." Because when high-level mob guys would get busted, cops drag in everyone who'd ever so much as sold him a newspaper or had a cup of coffee in the same diner on the same day. But Tony had never been anything but straight up with me, so I went with my gut instinct and said, "Sure, Tony, what do you need?" "I need you to help me bury a guy." My face probably turned white, and that's when Tony started a belly laugh. "Gotcha, Slick. You think I would ask you to do something like that? Well, actually, I am. I need you to drive me to a funeral." Whew. I exhaled with relief. I asked him why he wasn't driving himself. Tony checked his gold watch. "Can you do me a favor? Suit up, and I'll tell you about it on the ride over." So I ran into my house and jumped into my best navy pinstripe. When I got back outside, Tony was sitting in the passenger seat. I got behind the wheel. I moved the power seat back a few inches as Tony was of stockier build than I. And then I asked him, "Where to?" "Jersey." "Take the Verrazano. I'll direct you from there." I'd ridden in Tony's caddy a number of times. Had once owned a tired old Coupe de Ville myself, but this thing was like piloting a yacht, plush and smooth, with zero road feel. Touch the gas and that 2.5-ton rolling parlor would giddy up and go. We headed west on Queens Boulevard. "Larry, listen, before we go too far here, I gotta tell you, this favor you're doing me has no strings, but it may have consequences." I get a queasy feeling in my stomach. "The funeral is for Choo Choo Tommaso. He was capo regime for a Lucchese crew. Now, my old man knew him pretty well, so the consequences are, I guarantee The feds will be filming the whole fucking thing. Maybe even some TV news vans, if those weasels got wind of it. So you're gonna be seen and recorded. If you're not okay with that, you can bail now and no hard feelings. I thought about it for a second. How many people ever get to attend a mob funeral? I told Tony I was in. No problem. And besides, the feds already had me on tape at his wedding. That's a little different, Slick. At my wedding, you could have been some Irish in-law, maybe a close neighbor. After today, they're gonna think you're my new driver, maybe even part of my crew. I took a deep breath and kept driving. I asked Tony where Joey and Tommy were. They were Tony's customary drivers and bodyguards. Joey's busy and Tommy's sick as a dog. I was not going to ask what Joey was busy doing, but the curiosity was getting to me. So I asked Tony why he just didn't drive himself. It's prestige bullshit. You get to a certain level, and if you show up to a thing like this driving yourself, you lose some face, you know, some power. It's a horseshit game, but it is what it is. We drove for a long time in silence. We passed a strip joint on the north side of the boulevard that had been there forever. Tony and I both looked at it as we drove by. Hey, remember that chick you and Victoria found me with the night before the wedding? How could I forget? Tony pointed at the place and nodded. Ah, so that's where he met her. It was a dive. The smoke was so thick you needed a scuba tank. I'd been there once and seen a stripper dancing on a pool table. She had a great body, but an unlikely costume. She wore spike heels and dark knee socks. The heels were standard, but I'd never seen the knee sock gimmick before. And they looked like some weird, odd fabric. I got closer. Those knee socks were the hair on her lower legs. She only shaved above the knee. I guess everyone has their style. I smiled, remembering her, and Tony says, "You ever been in that joint?" I nodded. And Tony says, "Did you meet Knee Sock Nancy?" I burst out laughing and asked Tony if he was a regular there. "Well, not so you'd notice, even though I own the place." Wow. I knew Tony owned a few businesses, some dry cleaners, a truck broker, but this was news to me. Every time I hung out with Tony, there was a fresh angle. By now, we were almost on the bridge. I asked Tony why they called him Choo-Choo Tommaso. Tony explained that when Carmine Tommaso was coming up and making his bones, he took a contract to hit another guy. When he went to whack the guy, he had forgotten to load the gun. So instead, he pistol-whipped him and threw his unconscious body from an overpass into the path of an oncoming train. Choo-choo. Now Choo-choo is taking his last ride. Somewhere, Hoboken, Jersey City, I'm not sure, Tony directed me to turn a corner and bam. It looked like a scene staged from a gangster movie. A hearse that might collapse under the weight of the flowers, trailed by an endless row of black limousines. In his own way, Choo-choo was leaving on a train of Cadillacs and Lincolns. There were a few hundred guys milling around outside the tiny funeral parlor, a mob of mobsters. There were enough pinky rings in that crowd to fill a pizza oven. The funeral parlor looked like it had been built inside an old clapboard house. To give it some gravitas, somebody hung a pediment over the front door and then stuck a couple of white Roman columns under it. It looked like Little Caesar's house on the prairie. Then I flashed on something I'd read about. Back in the 20s or 30s, some creative wise guy came up with a fantastic way to dispose of bodies. Double-decker coffins. Somebody's 80-pound granny would get the top bunk, and some unlucky stooge with a big mouth or who skimmed some vig would get the bottom drawer. Pallbearers would scratch their heads as they'd lift a box that weighed twice what it should. But with that clever ruse, lots of mob rubouts went unsolved for lack of a body. It was brilliant. Before I could get part of the story out of my mouth, Tony nodded his head and smirked. This was that joint, the funeral home of the double-decker coffin. This was too cool. I asked Tony where he wanted me to park. Right here is perfect. But we'd be double parked, and I asked if he was sure. Tony laughed and said, Larry, don't be such a fucking citizen. Choo-choo bought the police chief here a vacation home. We won't be getting no tickets, trust me. I put it in park and cut the engine. I'm just gonna show my face a little, pay my respects. Shouldn't be more than half an hour. They all seen you drive me here so you can hang around and socialize, or there's a decent coffee shop around the corner if you want a sandwich. I wasn't hungry, and I just had to wade into that crowd of Cosa Nostra, if for no other reason than the looks I'd get as a skinny, 6-foot redhead. Tony was like a rock star. Guys couldn't wait to kiss his ass. His old man was number 2 in the organization. Hoods would elbow their way to Tony and grab his hand and shake it like it held a cure. Some would look from Tony to me, trying to make sense of it. A few times, for shits and giggles, Tony introduced me as Slick, his new driver.
Nice to meet you, Slick,
they'd say. And the thought balloon over every one of their heads was, who the fuck are you? As I shook their hands, I was doing some wondering of my own. How many of these guys had pulled a trigger on a .22 pressed to the base of some stoolie's skull, or wrapped piano wire around some rival's throat as they sent him into the next world? It was surreal. Most of them never made it inside the funeral parlor. It was so small it could not have held more than a couple dozen people. It was a sidewalk send-off with several hundred wise guys and me. After a while, some pallbearers came out of the funeral with Choo-Choo on their shoulders. In my mind, I was hearing this and trying not to laugh. I also wondered if Choo-Choo was in there alone or maybe had some company. I decided he was solo. The pallbearers didn't appear to be struggling. A uniformed chauffeur fired up the hearse. They eased Choo-Choo into the jungle of flowers. I felt Tony grab my arm. Quietly in my ear, he said, now's a good time to bring the car around, Larry. Which was kind of funny, because the caddy was still double-parked, only footsteps away. But it was all about show and prestige. I got in the caddy and decided to play it to the hilt. When Tony stepped off the curb and toward the car, I jumped out and ran around the car and opened the door for him. He hopped in, laughing. Nice flourish there, Slick. The crowd loved it. I was above and beyond. Thank you. I asked Tony where to now. The cemetery? Fuck that. If we drove behind that bastard Choo-Choo, we'd probably puke from the stench coming out of his coffin. He was a scumbag. Everybody hated that asshole. I asked, why then were we here? Business, Slick. It's all bullshit, all show. Paying phony respects. Nobody respected that bastard. Every guy in that crowd would like to rip the lid off of that coffin and piss on Choo-Choo. Tony spoke these words with some vitriol. What had Choo-Choo done to Tony or his dad? I didn't want to know bad enough to ask, so I didn't. Take us back to Queens, Larry. Want some clams? I'm buying. I pointed the caddy east. As fun and weird as it was good to be away from hearses and unknown wise guys. As we powered onto the Gothels Bridge, Tony sparked another cool. You know, I really appreciate you doing this solid for me, Larry. That's another one I owe you. If you ever need something, let me know, okay? I nodded and hit the gas. And so it was, I got a lesson in respect. The real kind and the bullshit kind. Away we went out to Howard Beach. Tony pressed the button on the stereo. By now it was late afternoon and the sun was low in the sky. It threw a light that was less warm and a lot paler than in August and September. You could really feel autumn settling in over New York. There was a snap in the air. Just a few weeks back, Tony and I had sat on stools out front of that clam bar, flirting with pointy chicks in their bikinis and heels. Now they'd be wearing coats and designer jeans. But they would not be any less pointy. In those days, there was no social media, and mob guys really didn't need it. Their grapevine was short and fast. Some of them would be nosing around, wanting to know who the fuck that red-haired kid was driving Tony Spumante. Was he a new guy or borrowed from somebody else's crew? I wouldn't be telling. And neither would Tony. The neon beacon of Lenny's Clam Bar came into view. It threw a welcoming pink glow against the dimming October sky. We could smell the garlic right from the car. Life was good. Hey, thanks for stopping by the dojo once again. If you like what you hear, head over to Patreon and join up for special rewards and bonus episodes. We want to put together a live show, and that's the way to make it happen. And Vengeance is Ours Part 2 will be out before month's end and only available at patreon.com/thatlarryshow. We'll reveal what happened to Tommy, the weasel who messed with the wrong guys. You do not want to miss that show. I want to apologize to those who visited the dojo store and found insane shipping costs. That issue has been resolved. So be the first on your block to own a Take No Shit Dojo shirt. Only $20 and free shipping in the lower 48. Just go to thatlarryshow.com and click on the dojo store. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at thatlarryshow. And so, my friends, when we are asked to pay our respects, let us bear in mind that no one, regardless of lofty position or title, dead or alive, deserves automatic respect. Honest respect can only be earned. And if they demand it without earning it, tell them to fuck off. We'll see you next Tuesday, right here, at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. And until that time, take no shit.